You know, we was talking before services, stuff about people that you used to know and things that happened. And, you know, a few weeks back, I talked to a young feller that I hadn't seen in, I don't know, 20 years or so, I guess. And his dad happened to be the one that baptized me and Tricia. So naturally, I asked him, I said, "How's your dad doing?" Well, guess what the answer was? He don't no longer keep the Sabbath or the holy days, or nothing like that. His son still is, but he's gone. You know, or not doing it right now. And you, it, sometimes it slaps you right in the face, and you realize, you know, we're not immune to that. I mean, that could happen to any of us if we don't stay on our toes and watch what's going on. Old Satan, he's a trickster. He'll be having you look over here, and then all of a sudden he jerks the rug out from under you. But anyway, you know, down in Brazil, they have a race. It's called a Jungle Marathon. And it offers racers the opportunity to test their survival medal in the wilds of the Amazon rainforest. They can choose between two tracks, either 63 miles in four stages or 150 miles in six stages. But the real challenge is not just to reach the finish line, it's to survive massive anacondas and deadly spiders, every other critter that's trying to kill you before you get there. And these people have to be committed, you know, and constantly train, have self-discipline and great endurance. Another one of these races is Alaska's Iditarod Trail 1000 Invitational. Now, this one's billed as the world's longest and toughest race, but it's not just for the average competitor. They have to trek across 1,000 miles of some of the harshest terrain on Earth. That includes gale force winds, waist-deep snow, frequent blizzards, mud, and deal with snow blindness. And all this happens when the temperatures can be up to 50 below zero. And they have minimal support crews throughout the entirety of this race. And for the final 500 miles, these competitors have to be 100% self-reliant, packing and lugging all their own gear to the finish. You know what? I always thought that the Iditarod race was all about dog sled racing from Fairbanks to Nome. But when I done a little research on it, found out they added a human power aspect to it. And I was watching this guy from Iowa tell his story of completing that 1,000-mile trip on a bicycle. Now, he ran a race to raise money for cancer research. And on his bike, he had the names of donors and people that had cancer that were counting on him to finish the race. Now, his bicycles weren't your normal ride down the street bicycle. They had some big old knobby tires on them and looked more like motorcycle tires than bicycle tires, so they could get traction, go through that deep snow. But still, 1,000 miles over that kind of terrain was pretty amazing. This boy said when he took off on this journey that you'd go for days and not see another human being. See or hear another human being, and that it felt like that you was the only person on the planet. At one point, he went through a 41-mile section that he couldn't even ride his bike at all. He had to push it through the snow and the muck. I think once he said he had a 14-mile stretch, it took him 9 hours to push his bicycle that far. So, and he'd done 41 miles of that. But he trudged on, making his camp at night in the snow with just a sleeping bag. And then, at one point, 40 miles from the finish line. So it went, what, some 960 miles. 40 miles from the finish line, he was caught in a storm so bad that he seriously considered quitting, taking his, they have satellite phones, said he thought about taking his satellite phone out and calling in for a helicopter to come and rescue him out of there. But he looked at those names on the bike while he was all huddled up during that blizzard and looked and seen that he knew those people were counting on him. And the real reason that he was doing this in the first place. And it gave him the will to get on to the finish line. You know, Apostle Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians and compares our Christian life with a race. We turn over to 1 Corinthians 9. And starting in verse 24 through 27, it says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I preach to others, I myself should become disqualified." You know, just like those guys that run the Iditarod and the Jungle Marathon, we have to have great endurance while running our race to be able to reach that reward that we're striving for. But there's one big difference in these races that are created by men, which pits one man against another. And there's only one winner at the end. But God's people should run as a team. And when a team member stumbles or falls down, we shouldn't be running away from them to try to beat them. We should be there to help them up and encourage them on. Because God is the one that called us all to be in this race. I want to turn back to Matthew 10. And verse 22 says, "And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But he who endures to the end will be saved." He who endures. Now, what does that word endurance mean? What does the word endurance mean? This is the definition that I looked up. It was the fact or power of enduring an unpleasant or difficult process or situation without giving way, denoting or relating to a race or other sporting event that takes place over a long distance or otherwise demands great physical stamina. But you know, before we ever start this race, we're told to count the cost, ain't we? Turn over to Luke 14. Starting verse 25. "Now great multitudes went with him, and he turned and said to them, 'If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it, lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, 'This man began to build, but was not able to finish.' Or what king, going to make war against another king, does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000. Or else, while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks for conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. You know, we can't take it lightly, the race we're in. We're going to face many obstacles and have to weather all kinds of situations. But we must commit to God's training program. Training takes self-discipline, moderation, prayer, Bible study, meditation, fasting, and fellowship. All these things help us to get in shape and stay in shape for our race of endurance. I'm going to turn over to Hebrews 12 now. Read verse 1, Hebrews 12. Says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which is so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. You know, when you're running any kind of race, you want your racing gear to be as light as possible. You don't want to have extra weight to slow you down. The same in our spiritual life. We can get weighted down by the deceitfulness of riches, sin, and the cares of this world. It's real easy to let things in the world get in front of you and distract you. You know, Satan has traps and snares at every turn. When I was a kid, I used to watch cartoon. You all probably watched it too. About Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. Now, Wiley had a trap of some or snare set every turn to try and catch the Roadrunner. And the Roadrunner would just miss him by mere seconds. You know, sometimes I feel like that old Roadrunner myself. You know, we have to set a constant pace of prayer and Bible study until it becomes a habit to keep us in top shape and help us to recognize those snares and traps. We need to be willing to help our teammates. When somebody's facing trials and hardships, we should be praying for them and encouraging them. 1 John 3. First John 3 and verse 16. By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us. And we also ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? You know, we have the perfect team captain that we can look to. And he has endured everything that we have and a lot more. You know, hardships, verbal attacks, death threats, or mockings. And he knew beforehand that the beating and terrible crucifixion that he would have to face by the hands of men. I'm going to turn back over to Luke 22. Verse 41-42 says, and he was withdrawn from them about a stone's throw, and he knelt down and prayed, saying, Father, if it is your will, take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. So we have to follow Christ's example of doing God's will to be able to stick to his plan. Sometimes we might wish that there was an easier way. but we must look to Jesus Christ, who set the perfect example by fully submitting to the Father's perfect will. And you know, when we look back at even these men who endured these grueling physical races and the hardships that they faced for the good of the few, how much more are we willing to endure in our spiritual race when the reward we're working toward is not just for the few, but for the whole world? So if we do endure to the end and make it to the finish line, and there awaits Jesus Christ and God the Father, and we can hear those words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant."